So many ways to say I love you in different languages across the land. You haven't heard them all, so I'll tell you as only a true geek can.
Hello and welcome to Geekily Yoked, the world's best married Christian geek podcast. As always, I'm Lehman Kessler.
And I'm Rachel Kessler.
And the slight sounds of barking is Bilbo, and if you hear any sort of cooing and or crinkling of weird elephant toys, that will be our infant daughter, Amanda.
We podcast amidst distraction.
You know what? It works,
I like
though.
To think that it's podcast verite.
Precisely. Well,
it's
know,
in the moment.
It's tranche de vie. It gives them a slice of our very strange life. Bilbo, you're not a part of it, however. I know you think you are, but you're not. Rachel, how has your geek fortnight been?
The days just run together in a sea of sitting in my chair, holding our child that refuses to sleep if not being held, watching strange things.
What are you on? What have you moved on to now?
Well, I'm still rewatching Farscape.
Okay,
on and off.
There's a lot of that.
I'm well into season 3, which is the good stuff.
Okay.
I've been watching Community, actually.
Really?
I sort of rewatched most of season 3. That Community has been like my middle of the night feeding watching, because
oh, okay.
Like
you're done with Gilmore Girls for the moment, right? Because wasn't Gilmore Girls fulfilling that role for a bit long?
Well, it was on my computer.
Oh,
but now
right.
I have the iPad and Netflix on the iPad.
Oh, that's right.
So that's been pretty awesome. So it's been a lot, and like, I just have the Community on like autoplay.
Oh, okay.
So it just goes into the next episode, and so I just sort of
can just go from one to the other to the other.
And I don't. It doesn't matter if I don't really like, finish one.
Yeah.
And anyway, so that's been my like middle of the night television viewing.
That's fair enough. Our good friend and power listener Andrew Reeves was wondering whether or not getting a tablet device was worthwhile. My first question to him was whether or not he was nursing an infant. That really seems to be where the iPad has come into its own.
Yeah. Maybe I shouldn't say publicly on the podcast how the iPad has been damaged in that process.
We'll just leave it to our audience's fertile imagination. My Fortnite, well, what I do, since I'm, you know, not feeding the child, is I have mastered the art of one-handed Civilization playing on my laptop. Also, I'm learning how to sort of, like, internet while on the bouncy ball, which is a...
It kind of reminds me of how our midwife was complaining about her great regret from when she was on maternity leave was not being able to play enough World of Warcraft.
Oh, that's true. Well, you need both hands for that.
Exactly, yeah.
There's no, you know, hands-free nursing. Well, there's probably some horrible, like, exoskeletal suit you could strap into, you know.
I don't even want to know.
With science?
Well, I mean, theoretically, I could nurse in, like, one of the carriers. I'm just not that cool yet.
Oh, okay. I don't even know how it works.
You don't even want to know how it works.
But the house is starting to look a lot more festive, although looking around this room, we didn't actually light any of our Christmas lights.
I plugged the tree in.
Oh, okay. Which is in another room that we can't see.
Yes.
But we have put up the decorations, the various Disney Christmas ornaments.
We have forced our daughter to wear strange Santa hats.
We have put her in Santa hats and put those Santa hats pictures on the internet.
Yes.
Although worse than Christmas hats are the fact that we have also put her into swaddling clothes.
We have. 3 times now.
Yes, indeed. Amanda has begun her acting debut. And it's a Victor Victoria sort of situation, as she has played our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ for 2 different churches, 3 different performances. How did she do, you think?
Well, she got off to a bit of a rocky start.
Yes.
With squalling in the wings at the first one.
Well, to be fair, she really wasn't able to get into the Christmas spirit as, you know, I don't know how many, like, horrible, like, winter blizzards Bethlehem had to deal with. and we took our lives into our hands driving down to the mall where there's a sort of a bizarre little church nestled into the, I don't know,
giant Toronto
downtown mall.
Yeah.
It's bizarre. I'm sure there's a metaphor in there somewhere. But she didn't make the birth of Christ, but she did make the, I guess, adoration. I wasn't there. I was sort of in the wings.
Yeah, like the adoration, the magi, the concluding big triumphant, O come all ye faithful, sing along.
Apparently she did quite well.
She did. She did great. She was apparently mugging for the crowd. She was turning the right way.
She gets that from me.
Everyone has said she is her father's daughter.
And then at our own church, she did a double billing.
Exactly.
Is that Jesus, with only a little bit of fussing, sort of turning.
But we managed to
calm her down.
Curb it.
Yes, I recall those famous stained glass windows wherein we see the Blessed Mother with her finger in Jesus's ravenous maw.
Yeah, exactly.
That would work.
I think so.
That would make a thing. I was suggesting that we try to go like full medieval with our like pageant display and have nursing
the Jesus the Maria Lactans.
Yes.
No. I don't think that probably would have gone over.
Too Anglican?
A little too Anglican.
No, that's fair enough.
But we just have Christmas Eve to go, so we'll see how that comes off. Oh,
right. Precisely. So yes, we are here in full-blown Christmas spirit in this household.
Are we?
Aren't we?
Well, I am, but you're not exactly famous for your Christmas spirit.
I did come up with the greatest Christmas song of our generation.
Oh, Christmas stick.
Oh, Christmas stick. Oh, Christmas stick.
Every year.
We stick you in every the year corner.
We have to go through this argument where Lehman seems to think it is the grossest capitulation to consumerism to have a Christmas tree.
It's just so messy. And you gotta, like, if it's the artificial one, you gotta, like, put it together. And if it's a real one, then it's so sticky. And it makes Bilbo go crazy because all he wants to do is destroy it.
You missed him earlier today when he was running around the dining room table trying to get at his stocking, because it still apparently smells like pet store.
Well, and also, don't we, like, put, yeah, like, nice things in there, so whatever smells from last year probably still held over?
Anyway.
I'm in the Christmas spirit. We watched Christmas movies.
Did we?
We watched Fellowship of the Rings, the first
half. And your strange Lady Gaga Muppets Christmas special?
We did watch the Lady Gaga Muppet holiday special. It was barely Christmas.
That's true.
I do not know what any of those songs had to do with, the birth of our Savior. Or Kristen Bell, for that matter. She was just kind of there.
Maybe she's just friends with Lady Gaga.
I also, what I'm wondering if it's like, is it like Kristen Bell to Jason Segel and like Forgetting Sarah Marshall?
And the Muppets Segel there. The yeah, Muppets? Yeah, like, yeah.
That, Jason Segel wasn't there.
No, it's very true.
It was Lady Gaga, Elton John, and
Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Oh, right. Joseph Gordon-Levitt was showed up briefly, which was, you know, pretty awesome. Joseph Gordon-Levitt going to be Sandman. Thoughts on that? He's going to be the Sandman. Possibly.
I really have no dog in this Spider-Man fight.
Not Spider-Man.
Sorry, Batman.
Not Batman. It's going to be Sandman, as in Neil Gaiman's Sandman.
Wait, Neil Gaiman's Sandman?
Joseph Gordon-Levitt is going to be Sandman and will possibly be directing.
Okay.
No, not the Spider-Man villain.
I'm not sleeping anymore, Lehman.
Thomas Hayden Church has defined that role for a generation with Dancing Spider-Man.
I'm not sleeping much.
It's very true. No. Not the actual.
Okay, that makes a lot more sense.
Yes.
And I'm much more interested.
Although, Paul Giamatti is also going to be in the new Spider-Man movie, which means that there's now like a full like sideways connection.
But Paul Giamatti being in that movie just means that it will be a bad movie and he will be good in it.
Oh, that's right.
Because that is his career.
He and Tom Wilkinson have this bizarre power to be the best part of bad movies.
No, but Tom Wilkinson is also in good movies.
That's true. Well, Paul Giamatti is also in good movies.
Is he? Really?
Yes. I like Sideways.
I hate Sideways so much.
We like Shoot 'Em Up.
That was fun. I did like that movie.
It was mostly The Illusionist, which was a garbage movie except for Paul Giamatti eating sausages. Mm. I think, didn't we decide that like...
And Rufus Sewell's piercing blue eyes.
Didn't we decide that a great movie would just be like a supercut of half an hour of Paul Giamatti eating sausages with Tommy Lee Jones eating steak in Captain America? If you just kept cutting back and forth between those...
I think that conversation might have happened in your head.
Anyway, that would be the best movie of all time.
Okay.
Anyway, no. Joseph Gordon-Levitt, who did a fine rendition of Baby It's Cold Outside, which I watched a bizarre Facebook conversation which was questioning whether or not that song is like
about, I think that assault. Song is about date rape.
Okay, well.
Well, at one point, she actually says, hey, what's in this drink?
No. She does, doesn't she?
Yes!
Maybe it's just a nice mold.
No!
Wine and she's...
It's...
She wants to know...
A horrible song!
How much cinnamon?
Not... Not as horrible as Christmas Shoes.
Ugh, Christmas Shoes.
Well, which I never actually, like, I knew that Christmas Shoes existed.
I did not know Christmas Shoes existed until this Christmas.
No, I vaguely was aware of its existence, but I didn't actually know the lyrics or what it was about.
Okay.
And I sort of got through the whole, was it
Paula? It was Patton Oswalt.
Patton Oswalt's, like, rant about it. And I was like, okay, well, it's kind of sentimental and
hokey
but like that's what you kind of expect at Christmas, so I wasn't that bad until it got to the end with here is a pastor. I'm gonna get on a slight pulpit here and give my little
Rachel's not been able to give a full sermon in about how long has it been, like 2 months now?
Three months. But it's the bizarre Christian narcissism that believes that God works the entire cosmos to teach you
a lesson.
To teach you a lesson or for things to work out the way God wants it to work out for your... So the it's like there's this tendency I've seen to believe that the entire cosmos is being orchestrated by God to my benefit.
For those who don't know, Christmas Shoes is the story of a man waiting in line to buy some items when a small boy in front of him attempts to purchase Christmas shoes, which he doesn't have enough money for, and the man helps him buy the shoes. And then the child explains that the shoes are for his mother who is dying, and he wants the shoes so she will be pretty for Jesus. And the man realizes that the child was sent to him by God to like teach him.
Well, that's the end. That's the big climax of the end. So the man who's been grumpy and not in the Christmas spirit pays for the shoes and is full of joy. And he realizes that God sent him the little boy to put him in the Christmas spirit.
And
the rage within me.
Because it's not just God sending the little boy. It would also mean God sending the little boy's mother
to have cancer. And that, like, this little boy coming is to make his life better. Not God sent me to this little boy to get his mother's shoes. Not, like, you know. But up until that point, Christmas Shoes was a, like, overly sentimentalized piece of schlock.
Yeah.
And then it just became horribly, destructively bad theology.
Now, it's interesting because this rant here reminds me of when your lady chains were yanked over watching Crazy Stupid Love, and we saw how Ryan Gosling's character finally came to realize that his, like, womanizing was problematic only in as far as it affected him.
Yeah, that was my... Like, Crazy Stupid Love was actually kind of a fun movie, but it was, like... Oh, the womanizer doesn't stop womanizing because it's a bad thing to do and he's a horrible person. He realizes that it's not going to make him happy.
Yes.
So, who's the girl in it?
Oh, Emma Stone?
Emma Stone, yes.
She's
so Emma Stone.
Got a pocket full of sunshine.
She does have a pocket full of sunshine.
Also, Dayton Spider-Man.
Yes.
I'm just
blonde hair. Why would she have blonde? I don't like her.
Well, because she's not Mary Jane.
I know, so, but she doesn't look good with blonde hair.
Well, okay, that's fair.
Anyway, shall we actually go somewhere with this? I feel like since the baby has been born, our podcasts have taken on delightfully...
I disagree. I feel like we were this randomly disjointed, like, long before we ever had a podcast.
Well, of course, long before we ever had a podcast. Long before we ever had a child?
Well, there's that.
Okay.
But anyway, it all comes back to Christmas.
Yes.
I feel it. I feel it in my fingers.
See, I've been reading lots of rants about Love Actually as well.
But Bill Nye?
I know, and that's my point. That one guy actually posted this whole article on Facebook about like a huge critique of Love Actually and how problematic it is. And all I could say was, I totally agree with everything you're saying. But Bill Nye.
Bill Nye.
And I just.
It's touching and wonderful.
I feel it in my fingers. I feel it in my bones. Christmas is all around us.
So the story goes.
Indeed.
But yes, Christmas. That time of year when Lehman gets all sort of grumpy and persnickety and Rachel gets frustrated that Lehman is not quite in the Christmas spirit. What can we do to improve this?
So the question that we wanted to talk about was how you geekify Christmas, right?
Yes.
Because Christmas is such a... wholesome
Christmas shoes.
Yeah, like every all the like quintessentially Christmas stuff is just very
Rachel got really upset when she came in and found out that I was watching It's a Wonderful Life.
Were you actually watching it or did it just come on?
It was on.
I was like, why is this movie on in my house? I hate that movie so much.
But It's a Wonderful Life is supposed to represent all that is great in Christmas.
No, but the problem is the last 10 minutes of that movie are good. But it takes like 3 hours to get there. 3 hours of watching this man's life destroyed.
Also, the villain gets away with it.
The villain does totally get away with it, it's true.
Because, like, he just totally took that money.
Yeah.
Apparently, Saturday Night Live once did a satisfying ending to that, where they're like, wait a minute, hey, drop the money! And they all, like, go and storm Mr. Potter's residence, and it's, he's being played by the John Lovitz.
Okay.
And, like, they're challenging him on it, and he at one point stands out of his wheelchair to protest, and he's like, hey, he's not even crippled!
Wow.
That was pretty amazing. It was a good time.
But yeah, Christmas is very wholesome. Christmas is very sort of...
It's got the... Well, it's just there's this weird expectations around it for, like, I don't know, vague notions of family and good cheer and all that sort of, like, Dickensian nonsense, right?
So how you incorporate the geek... Where is the geek come in Christmas?
Well, first I wanted to look at how my Christmases have already had sort of elements of geek in them.
Should we say on the way to our daughter's doctor's appointment yesterday... The yard with the Yoda and Darth Vader dueling with Santa hats on in the front yard?
First of all, I think they were inflatable, which is already kind of amazing. And yes, they did in fact have red and green lightsabers, which is canonical.
And Santa hats. That was, and we almost were going to stop and take a picture, but we were already like 20 minutes late.
There's the fact that Yoda lightsaber fighting is really problematic. And if they wanted to do it, they should have had him just like standing perfectly still and letting his lightsaber like fly around him like a little electron of
it's
death.
It's true. CGI amazing. Yoda is the worst.
You could still do CGI Yoda with it, but just like the notion of him like not having to like, you know,
I agree.
Ugh. Wasted opportunity.
I agree.
But yes, so we saw that, and that sort of set our minds to thinking about this notion of geekness. And what to do about geekness. Now, my family Christmas has already sort of had an element of geekery to it, simply because my brothers were huge nerds, more so than I think your brother was.
Yeah.
And as such, you know, the family get-togethers were a time for seeing movies together, and for playing lots and lots of board games. Like, that was the big, like, thing that my brothers and I sort of did. And so we would get, you know, generally geeky-ish board games would kind of, you know, show up around Christmas time. We would, you know, I mean, and we would just geek out, as family would. So I already have a slight, you know, connotations of those things. I remember, I want to say it was Christmas, like, 94, 95, I got... the Star Trek The Next Generation board game.
Really?
It was very strange. It involved, like, placing green and yellow beads around, like, a map of the galaxy. And, like,
awesome.
I feel like it was very conceptual. Like, it was certainly, like, before kind of, like, Eurogamey stuff was, like, around. Okay. So it was very just, like, here's a random weird game, and we're just going to put Star Trek on it. Like, it didn't really... I don't feel like it really captured the essence of what Next Generation was about. Namely, there weren't a lot of, like, pastels and feathered hair.
I see.
Although I've used those beads in many, many games ever since. But I remember a big get-together was relatively recently after we were married. We all flew out to California.
Oh, yeah!
And, like an hour after we, like, got there, my brothers absconded with me to a game store, and we tried playing, like...
I remember that. The rule book to that game was, like, a small novel.
They had us try to play Twilight Imperium, which is this huge, huge, sprawling board game. I've become addicted to a new show called Shut Up and Sit Down, which are two charming Brits talking about board games, and they had, like, a playthrough of that game, and it was just like this—it's this massive, just 8 hours of logistics but there's like politics to it as well, and it's just it's very complicated and very sort of strange, and I get the feeling it would not quite be your cup of tea.
Probably not.
But yeah, so I mean, you know, already I have these connections with spending time with my family and engaging in these endeavors just because we are sort of nerdy-ish folks. I mean, we were, like I said earlier, we were watching the Fellowship. Well, you know, the Lord of the Rings movies came out around Christmas, and I remember seeing Fellowship 5 times over that winter break. 5 times. And it wasn't that I was like super like, oh, I gotta see it again, gotta see it again. But it was one of those situations where I liked it enough that everyone I knew was gonna go see it. That when they were like, hey, Lehman, we're going to see Lord of the Rings. Do you want to come? It's like, sure. I've already seen it, but why not? So, like, I saw it with my brothers, and I saw it with my friends, and I saw it, like, with my family in Mississippi, and just, like, I never turned down an opportunity to see it because it was kind of amazing.
It was pretty awesome.
And it's sort of Christmassy. There's like themes of food and sacrifice.
Speaking of which, I watched the BBC Chronicles of Narnia.
Oh, right, yes.
And I never cease to be amazed at C.S. Lewis's ability to make sardines sound appetizing.
That's what, sardines and what, like crackers or
sardines and toast? Toast, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, I was thinking about food.
Well, precisely. Well, the Brits do a very good job of that in their various writings.
So what other thoughts do you have for Geekmas?
Well, again, it's just the fact that, you know, my family got together and did super geeky stuff. Although the creme de la creme of this would have to be Christmas 2000. So this was the first Christmas after I was in Kenyon.
Yes.
And we came back. And my oldest brother Jamie was in town, and a bunch of us got together, and he ran a D&D game for us, like a little one-shot game.
Okay.
And we were playing, and as we were playing, we noticed that there was that you know, the things we were running up against were very sort of strange, and there was something kind of slightly off about it. And then, about 2 hours in, it dawned on us that we were going up against Christmas-themed monsters and villains and challenges. At one point, we had to deal with a tattered warrior on horse who didn't have a tongue. He was a silent knight, Rachel. He was a holy knight.
Aww.
We saw three ships go sailing by. Aww. At one point. We had to fight a giant snow golem, and it, wow. I realized how to defeat it by flinging a rock at its top hat. Because there must have been some magic in that old silk hat they found.
Right.
And then, of course, we fought a horrible, Santa Claus monster. And
wow.
And every time we figured out what the, like, Santa, like, the Christmas reference was, we got, like, an XP boost. So, and then he would also penalize folks for misbehaving because he's my brother, and that's how he rolls. I feel like there is room for geek in Christmas. If maybe sort of on the periphery and kind of, you know, in whom one spends one's Christmas.
How one expresses one's Christmas.
Precisely. But in and of itself, you know, I don't know if there's a whole lot to sort of geek out about at Christmas time.
I made gingerbread Star Wars men.
You did make gingerbread Star Wars men, Rachel. It's great. Do we have like what, two or three sets of those?
Just two.
Like,
I have the set that has Darth Vader, Boba Fett, a stormtrooper, and Yoda.
And then I have the vehicle set. Yeah. So the
it has an X-wing, the Death Star,
the second Death Star,
Millennium Falcon, and a TIE fighter.
Is it a TIE fighter? I feel like it would be very fragile, like kind of you know right around the wings.
It is a little. So I made gingerbread. I made a couple of snowmen and angels and stuff, but then I made a bunch of Star Wars themed gingerbread cookies.
Although I think the geekiest cookies I've ever seen made are still the I, Claudius cookies.
Was that?
The House of Cheese?
Ah, yes.
I feel like we were there for that, or we certainly saw the pictures of it.
Yes.
But those were special.
I don't really recall.
Well, let's just say there was a Caligula cookie.
Oh, I do remember these now.
That made
extensive
use of jelly.
Well, and then there's also the different kinds of Christmas specials one can watch. So one can watch the sort of standard Rudolph and Charlie Brown Christmas.
Oh, right. We haven't pulled that.
We have not pulled yet. But then there's things like the first Doctor Who Christmas special.
See, yeah,
the first of the new Who. I'm
about to say, yeah,
the first David Tennant episode, which I always love.
Well, the British television has this weird phenomenon of the Christmas special in a way that we don't have.
My favorite is the Vicar of Dibley, like, eating four Christmas dinners.
Is that the one where Thorin shows up? Because isn't she
No, that's the very, very end of the Vicar of Dibley is this weird show.
Oh, right, that spans like a thousand years.
That spans like over 10 years.
Yeah.
But only has like a dozen or so. Oh, it has more than that. Maybe like 30 episodes.
But they bounce around a bunch.
Like, well, it was basically like they would do a series and then wait like 2 or 3 years and do another series.
Don French, like, you know, was doing everything else.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just like,
Being in Shrek movies.
What I love about it is that it's like you have this little village of Dibley.
That you keep
and then you just get kind of get like a little window glimpse into its life.
Yeah. I like it. I'm down with it. Not as much as you crazy seminarians are.
I know. I'm an Anglican priest. We're like contractually obligated. Like we swear our fealty to the bishop and we sign a declaration that we will like memorize the box set of the Vicar of Dibley.
As long as you disapprove of her theology.
It's like we have the quadrilateral of you know, the Old and New Testaments are the word of God and contain all things necessary to salvation, the teaching of the historic creeds of the church, the sacraments of baptism and Eucharist, the historic episcopate is the sign of church unity through the years, and then the fifth point of you know, adherence to the Vicar of Dibley.
Everyone wears a pink Easter Bunny costume. Man, that show is so strange. But yes, this whole idea of the Christmas special,
yeah,
is very. I'm trying to think of, like, what may have introduced. I feel like The Office may have been the thing that introduced me to
because
The Office had their amazing final episode of Christmas special, because they didn't have one between.
No, it was just their final episode. Yeah,
their final episode, which I remember. I want to say Jackson O'Brien and I like found it online because it hadn't been released in the States yet. We found it online, like downloaded it. I want to say
I remember Jack sent me the. I remember he sent me the discs like when I was over the summer when I was like doing my intensive German program at the University of Virginia. Like I got these bootleg CDs.
Well, because we had to burn them onto like CDR and then try to like watch it through his computer through his TV and that. Strange, you know, pre-Apple TV kind of way.
Yes.
And it was amazing. And it was this wonderful, like, just, I mean, like, you know, it was the cap to what was a great show. Oh, man. I remember, like, just freaking out right at the very end when she comes back into the party and, like, just wailing on him with a pillow. Because he'd totally been like, yeah, it's not going to get together. It's not going to happen. Like, you know, the show is too dark, too cynical. It's like, no, Stephen Merchant is a sap. And then I remember getting so mad when the DVDs came out.
Oh, and they put it on the back.
And they showed it on the back and they ruined it. And it was so like, go back, go back.
This is, for those who have not watched The British Office, this is the culmination of the equivalent of the Jim and Pam romance.
Oh, I know. That depresses
me. I know. It's the other way. I'm sorry. I betrayed Martin Freeman.
No, I know. Martin Freeman, who's also a fun part of Love Actually.
It's true.
But has
Love Actually is just a movie that has a cast that is too good for itself.
Yeah, it's true.
That's the problem with Love Actually, is that it is a horrible movie with incredibly shallow depictions of love and horrible, like, body image, like, fat-shaming trends for women. And it's a terrible movie, but it has a brilliant cast.
They realize
that tricks you into thinking that it's a good movie.
They realize that they shouldn't cast Annie McDowell in it, and that will fool people. Because if it had her, I think that might have been enough to remind people that it's a terrible film. But they were like, no.
But
we'll
Annie
use Keira Knightley.
Annie McDowell is the opposite of Paul Giamatti. If Paul Giamatti is the best part of bad movies, Annie McDowell just destroys good movies.
Yeah. Yeah.
It took me so long to realize and make peace with the fact that Groundhog Day is a good movie.
Yeah, no, but she definitely throws it off.
And Four Weddings and a Funeral? Delightful. Except for, like, she's terrible.
Yeah, no. Well, the fact is, no movie needs Annie McDowell in a universe that also has Minnie Driver. Right?
That's so true.
Like, I feel like they both provide...
I feel like that's an insult to Minnie Driver, though.
But I feel like they both provide this kind of, like, mid-90s quirky, frizzy-haired... like thing,
I guess.
But Annie McDowell just kind of pouts and is horrible, and Minnie Driver will play the most like wonderful, ridiculous opera star in a mediocre Phantom of the Opera movie.
Oh, right, that was her.
Yeah.
For anyone who's interested, the key to the Phantom of the Opera movie is to watch it in French.
Yeah, seriously. So if you just want to, like, watch dreamy Gerard Butler and, like, see pretty scenery, but then hear really good singers...
Watch it in French, and it's actually a decent movie.
Because the French were like, I guess we'll just get decent singers to be in it.
Yeah.
And not, like, Gerard Butler, who's like... I'm also sad that... They didn't do the hand gesture that I always assume happens with
where did she go?
Where did she go? Yes. And like you do like rotate the arm around to looking with, you know, anyway.
We digress.
We digress in our discussion.
A lot.
Of Phantom. But then there's Muppets, right? And Muppets make every Christmas.
Well, Muppet Christmas Carol. Yes, but like I just need that. Maybe we should have built up to that, but I just feel like it needs to be laid out that Muppet's Christmas Carol is the greatest Christmas movie of all time.
It's pretty amazing. Like it really, you know. I mean, I grew up with the Muppet Christmas Special, which was the weird one where they like all get together with Fozzie's mom's house.
Or perhaps dimly recall.
It was the big crossover event of the Jim Henson-iverse.
Okay.
Where you had...
Were there Fraggles?
There were, in fact, the Muppets, the Sesame Street Gang, and Fraggles all sort of together in this bizarre sort of mishmash. And I want to say it was one of these random specials that I had recorded off TV. But prior to that, and we've discussed this before, was Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas Special, which... Again, I associated with Christmas for years because it's so just sort of like sweet and sad and quiet and like just strange in a way that only Muppets can be. Because you didn't grow up with that. Have you seen it yet?
I've not seen it.
I feel if it's not on Netflix, I think it's definitely totally on YouTube, and we need to watch it because there is just some. It's like early Henson.
Okay.
So it's like weird.
All right.
Henson, and like there's no character, there's no like marketable characters in it. Emmett Otter did not take off as an IP. He is not on lunch pails, to my knowledge. But no, it's just it's somber, and it's, you know, it's like it's about like little animals in poverty trying to like eke together enough to like have kind of a Merry Christmas, and it's just so like, again, it captures that interesting quality of Christmas that you see in something like, I don't know, I guess Gift of the Magi. You know, that kind of, or the Little Matchstick Girl.
Yeah, but see, that's the kind of Christmas that just makes me sad. And I don't know if it's because, like, I think it's when it goes too far, like the Little Match Girl and Gift of the Magi, they just are so depressing.
They are really depressing.
And I mean, and not that I think we should blind ourselves to the plights of the less fortunate at Christmas time, but there's just something that seems almost exploitative.
I do feel robbed that the Muppet Christmas Carol did not have Little Muppet Need and Little Muppet Ignorance come out of the ghost.
But see, I think that's why in A Christmas Carol, the need and want, hunger and want... I think it's hunger and want.
Is it ignorance one of them? This one is... Maybe.
Or I think... Yeah.
Want and ignorance. There's a lot of these horrible little...
But it's the scene
children.
Where the Christmas present opens up his robes and there are these two, like, emaciated children.
Like, clinging to him.
Yeah. And it's this, like, great indictment of... The age and modernity and, like...
Well, 19th century modernity,
Well, that is modernity.
Yes.
We are postmodern now. Oh. Actually, we're like post-postmodern. Anyway.
It's hard to follow.
It's...
So you're not down with that?
No. I'm down with that because it's not sentimental.
Oh,
it's,
I see.
It's actually harsh. It's like the world sucks sometimes and we should be condemning it and name those atrocities for what they are. Not sort of exploiting the plights of others for some kind of holiday sentiment of
Christmas shoesness.
Exactly! And which is why I hate Christmas shoes
and
so
we're
much.
We're back to the Christmas shoes.
Yes. But I mean if we want to go to the difference between Christmas and Advent, like I mean that's what Advent is. If we're speaking of the coming of in Advent we joyfully wait for the coming of Christ into our world, but there's also that penitential side to it. That recognition that Christ coming into our lives speaks to that need for self-examination and that it will be, the coming of Christ will be apocalyptic as much as it is joyfully anticipated and will be glorious and will set the world to right. We have to recognize that setting the world to right means a sort of upending our world as we know it. I feel like to overly sentimentalize that does a disservice.
Well, and that's the big indictment for, you know, standard kind of Christmas fare, right? Is that it is so just sort of sentimental for sentimentality's sake.
Yeah.
Again, you know, the It's a Wonderful Life effect. Ugh. Just like, oh, Merry Christmas, oh!
Which is why I like things like A Muppet Christmas Carol, which have that... I mean, it has Tiny Tim, it has the sentimental side, but it also has just, like, that touch of snark Muppets can't avoid.
It's very true.
You know, with Gonzo and Rizzo the Rat narrating the whole thing, it just has a little bit of an edge.
But does it have as much of an edge as the Star Wars Christmas special?
You know, I am blissfully ignorant of the Star Wars Christmas special.
I tried, Rachel. I tried and failed. It's just that bad. There's a wonderful XKCD comic which sort of like charts things that are like good, things that are bad, things that are so bad they're good again. And then there's Star Wars Christmas special, which is like just off the chart. It's just like, it's just not enjoyable. It's like the Twilight movies. Mm. It's just, it's long and it's slow. And like, it starts with this like 15 minute to 8 year long scene of Wookiees just sort of like walking around a really cheap 70s set grunting at each other. And you're just, what? What on earth? And B. Arthur apparently shows up at some point, but no, I can't bring myself to it, Rachel. It's like, I literally was like, all right, I'm going to watch this. I'm going to have it. Nope. I didn't even get to like the really crappy like animated Boba Fett stuff. It is just a nightmare.
Well, and then there's my house every year where we watch, sorry, I'm thinking about Snark.
Oh, yes.
National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. My brother and my father love that movie.
That's a weird movie.
So much.
That's a mean movie.
I know, and that's kind of where I was going to go with this, yeah. Is that for me, that goes too far. Like, yeah. It's almost too...
nihilistic.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely, right?
Well, and it's also just that weird 80s, like, just brutal humor. Or, you know, like Father the Bride or things like that, where they're just like, hey, let's just, like, hit a guy with a stick emotionally for an hour.
Exactly,
and
yeah. And... So it's almost just a little bit... It's not nice. Like, the people aren't nice. It's not pleasant. It's just... Everyone's sort of odious.
Yeah.
And... But there is... But what I think is worthwhile is there is, like, this... The Chevy Chase character is so, like, almost innocent in his desire for the perfect Christmas. They do actually pull out a few little moments of charm.
Okay. That's
here
fair.
And there. And then there is the... The inevitable you'll shoot your eye out BB gun Christmas story.
Yeah, you guys watch that in this weird like blender remix fashion where like you sort of don't you like just sort of like keep like turning it to TV because it like runs.
Well,
like...
I think it's the well, I mean not that we have been in the States with cable
no.
for the years. Time, so I don't know. People who actually like are still engaged with the world of the United States and TNT, do they still do that or is it TBS? One of those stations
like 24-hour...
that... Yeah, Christmas Story. So we would just kind of like... It would just sort of be on all day.
Yeah.
But it is one of those movies that's almost like made up of vignettes so you can like get away with it.
I guess so.
Anyway.
I recently discovered that the little Ralphie in that is in Elf. Which is
really?
A Christmas movie I do enjoy.
Yeah.
It's set in the middle. It's cheesy, but I feel like it succeeds. And it gave Peter Dinklage a job.
It did give Peter Dinklage a job.
So that's always good. The best Christmas movie we just watched was Lion in Winter.
Oh, how did I not think about that?
Which...
Yes! Lion in Winter is my favorite. Aside from Muppet Christmas Carol, Lion in Winter is my favorite Christmas movie.
It's, would you like to explain to the folks
okay.
at home what
okay,
Lion in
so,
Winter is?
All right. It is the prototypical dysfunctional family Christmas movie.
Yes.
It is the, like, sort of historical fiction... What if, based on the fact that there was actually a Christmas court in 1183.
Yes.
When King Henry II let out his wife, Eleanor of Aquitaine, from, like, the sort of strange house imprisonment she was in.
Like you do.
And they kind of bring their three sons together to... skeeve and connive and plot and
determine who's being Richard the Lionheart, Prince John the villain of Robin Hood, and
Geoffrey, yeah, that one that no one remembers,
that, the other one sir not appearing in this film.
Exactly.
Which I
and it's just it's just so delightful. And with Peter and Henry II is of course Peter O'Toole.
Yes, who
so
just passed away.
So it was in honor of Peter O'Toole's passing that we had to watch Lion in Winter. But it's just, it's so delightful with wonderful lines like, he's got a knife. Of course he has a knife. We've all got knives. It's 1183 and we're barbarians. And
I'm going to Rome.
Why?
That's where we keep the Pope.
Exactly. Anyway, so, and it counts as a geeky movie because I'm a medievalist.
Yes, it counts as a geeky movie. And, you know, it's got James Bond in it and it's got Anthony Hopkins and everyone's in awful beards.
Everyone is an awful
beard. That was my takeaway this last time, which is like, wow, those are some really awful fake beards on everyone. It's like, we need to old-timey this up.
Oh, and as much as it has Katharine Hepburn being absolutely awesome, the other woman in the movie is a little unfortunate. Henry's like... girlfriend who's the sister of the King of France that's being passed around possibly to Richard. It's who's also has a special relationship with the King of France.
Lady agency lesson.
Yeah. Anyway.
So these are excellent, excellent Christmas films. What I always feel of, like, well, I don't know, I feel like it's a Christmas movie, but it sort of gets lost in the shuffle because it sort of also is a Halloween movie, is Nightmare Before Christmas.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like, I don't know.
I have the soundtrack in my Christmas playlist.
In recent years, I feel like it's kind of fallen away from our viewing. We did.
That's because Bilbo ate it.
He ate one of it, right? Don't we have...
No, we don't have the DVD. We just had a VHS and Bilbo ate it.
Oh, he did eat the VHS. Bad Bilbo. Bad. Because we got last year, we got to watch a lot of different Christmas movies because our friends did like the 30 days of Christmas and Christmas specials. You got to see Die Hard for the first time.
I had never seen Die Hard, so I finally saw that.
And I think we watched just the standards, Muppets and Love Actually.
Yes.
And then the other Christmas special that we got one year that we did watch, but I don't think we've really put it back in, was the Stephen Colbert Christmas.
Oh, I was actually thinking about that earlier today because I was watching. I watched all the Colbert from this week.
Today,
and it was very Christmassy. And I was like, I should watch the Colbert Christmas special again.
It's all right. It feels
well. It's very self-consciously Christmas specially, right? It's just like I'm going to be Stephen Colbert. I've got an hour of screen time, and I'm just going to, like, be Christmassy.
Well, it's like, the bizarre guests that he gets on.
Yeah.
Like, Willie Nelson just doing pot jokes and bizarre. Yeah, it's very strange. However, the best special feature on that is the book-burning fireplace that you can just set on, like, infinite loop. Man, I remember when I worked at Blockbuster, and we sold or tried to sell those, like, DVD fireplace sets, like, legit. Whew. That was brutal.
Mm.
I think we sold them. I don't know. It's very strange. Although what we used to sell at Chapters, which I'm very sad because I haven't seen them this year, were the cinnamon-scented pine cones.
Oh, you're going to be so sad. We're not going to my mom's house for Christmas this year. You won't get your Christmas soap.
Oh, I do like that bizarre Christmas soap. For all that you knock
the excessive Christmassiness at my family's house. You do like that Christmas soap.
I don't know. It's very strange. It does something to my reptile brain. I'm not going to lie.
Christmas is a very serious business at the Kessler household.
Yes, yes, yes. It's very much so. But really, you know, we've talked a lot about the sort of the films of Christmas that we sort of go through and like the various, you know, bizarre ways that we do Christmas as families. But I think what's truly conquered Christmas for the geeks, which is transformed Christmas, at least transformed my ability to get things for people during Christmas, is ThinkGeek.
Oh yeah.
I know ThinkGeek's been around
until
for a
you
while.
Give in to their free international shipping offer, which you find out only belatedly makes you choose the like crazy expensive shipping option that sticks you with like a $50 cash on delivery charge.
We're quickly learning that it's bad news to ship stuff to Canada from ThinkGeek. If we get little things, it's okay.
Yeah, yeah.
But every time we do like a big transaction, like we get slammed with custom bills. That's all right.
But it wasn't custom bills. It was like the bizarre secondary carrier they
that was first off. The second time around, I think we just got slammed straight up with custom bills. The joys of living in Canada. But ThinkGeek is amazing because it's like, I want to get something ridiculous for my nephews. Here are 8,000 ridiculous things. So I've totally sold out to the joy of ThinkGeek. ThinkGeek, if you would like to buy advertising on Geek Radio, we are more than willing to show ourselves.
We have an audience of three people.
And a baby. Come on, we can do all sorts of like cute little like commercials and like advertisements with Amanda. Amanda, don't you want to let mommy and daddy exploit you?
She looks very confused. She is not having with this.
Well, baby's natural state is confusion.
On that note, anything else?
Well, you know what? We're rolling into Christmas, so there's a chance this may be the last sort of episode
of 2013.
Yeah, you know, well, I think we're gonna try to. We're not traveling this year. So that'll make things nice. But we do have a Christmas present for all of our listeners, which is that the Debs and Errol's new amazing album Control Alt Duets has dropped. I have actually acquired my own copy, and so We will be able to play songs from that for the next little bit. Do check them out because they are awesome and they do amazing music. We're hoping to have Errol on sometime in the new year to talk about what it's like raising a geek daughter, or rather trying to raise a geek daughter. He has two, and from what I gather, he's had kind of 50% hit-miss ratio with that. Anyway, but we will be taking you out with Debs and Errol's wonderful song, Tribbles. From 2013, Year of the Geek.
Woo!
Geek out, y'all.
In a different time, where no one's gone before, you came into my sight, so cute could not ignore. You purred at me, you purred at me, you purred at me. And I guess I didn't think that there would be a catch. And so I fell hard, and then I brought you back. Make such a mess now. Who knew you go multiplying when I put you down? No, I didn't know the dribble that I brought in. So shame on me now. Who knew you go multiplying? Now I have so many more to pass around. Oh, oh, oh.
Dribbles, dribbles, dribbles.
Oh, oh, oh. They even got Spock. We're drowning, we're drowning, we're drowning. And now they're everywhere, on the bridge and in the vents. And when I order food, they come out instead. And now I see, now I see, now I see that it's gone wrong. And it won't cease. And I realize I'm losing it, 'cause all I think about is shooting.